Hi everyone, welcome back to Walk with Bex. Welcome back into the studio, a different location and setting today, but with a very special guest. And my guest actually made me write a list of the things to introduce him to the podcast today. So he is a magician, a musician, a local government worker, a part-time athlete. I want to come back to that one. He's vegan. He's also a podcast host himself. He is my number one supporter, I would say, in my entire career as a bodybuilder. And he's my brother. He's also my brother's brother, obviously. It's my brother, Chris. Or should I say, as he prefers to be known, Christopher Anousis. Welcome.
I'm happy to be here.
How did I do with the intro?
You did okay. You did okay. You started at a few bits, but you did all right as intros go. I'm just really nerding out to the microphones and bits and stuff like that. I've always wanted a Shure. I think it's an MV7B or something, or a 7X, I think it is. But I'm happy to be here. I'm happy with the fireplace. I'm happy with the surroundings.
You're very impressed.
I'm very impressed. This is profesh.
What does your podcast setup look like?
Spare room in my apartment in Aylesbury.
And why are you on the podcast today? Tell everybody.
Why am I here?
Yeah.
Because it's your birthday this week, tomorrow, in fact, as we're recording. And I wanted to come out and wish you happy birthday and be here. And plus, as a budding podcaster myself, I was just jealous that you had this fancy setup and I just wanted to come and hang out with you and talk about stuff.
I know. We can just chat about so much random stuff.
We can. I can't talk anything about bodybuilding, but hopefully you don't get any abuse in the comments below.
No. My audience are super professional and very supportive. And I just want them to get to know you, because this whole podcast is about me diving into the mindsets of individuals that really inspire me and that I find really interesting. And you are like one of my number one people. So
I'm inspiring and interesting. That's what I like to think. I forgot to add, there's one other reason that I came to Dubai, and that's the Nitro Cold Brew from Starbucks. So if they want to be a sponsor, but yeah, I'm very happy. So if I start shaking, it's because I've had too much.
But we've had so much caffeine since you got here. So much. I've been trying to limit my caffeine intake. I don't take pre-workout anymore.
You brought the wrong person to Dubai.
I have one coffee a day, and I think since you've been here, I've had about 12. It's nuts.
That's fine. You got to hit a liter a day. That's what I keep telling people. They're doing it wrong.
Okay, so let's get into it. Like, there was a whole list of things that you made me write down.
I didn't make you write them down.
You did. No. We had coffee today, and you were like,
I watched your previous podcast, and that bloke Terrence, he got a hell of an introduction, and I was a little bit jealous. So I wanted to come up with a list myself of not as great achievements.
Okay, so let's start from the beginning then. Cool. Magician or musician? I can't even say those two together. It really is a tongue twister. Yeah. Which one should we go for first?
I guess if we're going like chronologically through life, they kind of actually go hand in hand.
I kind of remember I was there.
Yeah, you were there. You were there. You were there for a lot of the things, to be honest. I think we've been talking today about what we're going to talk about today.
Without trying to talk
about
it too
much. So that we didn't get rid of all the content. But I guess if there's anything that's been a running theme throughout my life, it's being sort of, I'd like to say outgoing, although I wanted to be an introverted, depressed musician. I struggled because I enjoyed talking to people and performing too much. So from a young age, I've had a performative nature, I guess is a way to put it. So whether that's trying to make friends at school by doing magic tricks or by falling in love with music and studying that and trying to perform, that's kind of something that they go hand in hand, although they're slightly different. And one's considered cool, the other's considered you're lucky to still have a girlfriend.
And drama too. I remember the drama lessons.
Drama, yeah.
You try to make friends by pulling chairs under people and making them fall over.
Yes, I forgot about that.
Charlie's going to watch this. Oh, she'll know.
Sugar. Am I allowed to swear on this?
Yes.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, so
I completely forgot that you brought that up, and now I still feel terrible to this day.
She will remember this.
But again, it's a really bad attention-seeking nature that I try
to... Okay, so you're attention-seeking.
Yes, I am.
Yes.
In sometimes good way, but mostly bad way.
I think we all are in our family. And we kind of agreed to not discuss any family members here, but I think we're all pretty attention-seeking in the sense that we all want to be seen and heard. And from a young age, we were always brought up to be very confident. Yep. Mum and Dad instilled that in us. They were like, we want you to be confident. We want you to be successful in life and do anything that you want to do. And We weren't allowed to be quiet, although because you are the youngest in the family,
I had to shout a lot.
You had to shout a lot at the dinner table. Yes. And then I remember multiple family dinners where we'd be having conversations and the conversation would move on and then you'd pipe up and we'd be like, Chris, we've already moved on from that. Like, get over it, come on.
But I had a really good tidbit and I had a really good bit or a joke about that thing and I never got to say it.
So it's all of our faults.
Basically.
Okay. Yeah. So let's go into the musician and you. Yeah. When did you fall in love with music?
We have videotapes of my fifth birthday, so it had to be before then. When exactly before then, I don't know, but from a very young age, I was obsessed with Michael Jackson and pop music. I wanted to be a pop star from a young age, which I find quite interesting in this day and age, because I know that there are a lot of young kids out there now that aspire to be, I don't know, influencers or YouTubers or things like that, but the way I see it is they're just, actually it's my partner that told me this, so I need to give her the credit. But they're just this day and age's pop star, essentially. Is that any kid from a young age desires to be that person on TV or that person on YouTube if it's now, or they just
the person that's idolized.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
But for me, pop stars were the thing. You didn't have as much access to them. You didn't have as much content from them. But so they were put on this pedestal. They were deemed sort of almost godlike, I guess, especially in Michael Jackson's case it was. But yeah, I remember watching either Moonwalker on TV or something along those lines and just being obsessed with that performative nature. It was about the dance. It was about the songs. It was about just performing. And that's kind of when I fell in love with music.
And from a young age, you started practicing those moves very, very early on.
We don't need to talk about that on this podcast.
I wonder if I can get you
I can't moonwalk in this rug. It's not happening.
When was the last time you did?
What, moonwalk?
Yeah.
I can't tell you that because it's probably way too recent. Then no one knew about it because I just did it in my own time.
And the thing is, from a young age, that's all we had as entertainment. Yeah. Was things like music and very early kind of computer games and things like that. And as siblings, obviously, I've got three brothers and Chris is one of them. We all kind of went into different things. Alex was
it's
more
good
into
to know
sports.
That I'm one of them, by the way.
Alex was more into sports. I'd say Nick was probably more geeky in terms of like into music, but with more kind of computer games. Yeah. And then you were very much into music and dance and Michael Jackson. And I think that tape when you were 5 years old, I think I was in it too.
Yeah, you were.
I was doing some kind
Everyone's
of dancing in there.
There's no getting out of it, but we don't need to cut it into this pod or anything.
Oh, I don't even know if I could.
Splice it in.
People will comment on that down below. I'm telling you, they'll want to see that.
Your views will go up.
Okay, so then from a young age, going into school, tell people about that journey through music and your desire and want to become a pop star. How hard did you really work at it? Because I was there for it all, but I'd like to kind of...
I knew that I liked music and I wanted to get into music. And in high school... you had the option to learn an instrument. So as soon as I could, it might have been middle school as well, to be honest. And the options were like you learn the clarinet, the guitar, the whatever, the cello.
People still learn the clarinet.
Probably. No. Clarinet's cool. Don't just the clarinet. I like all music now. I'm a nerd. So the option to me seemed like guitar seemed like the obvious thing. Mm. I don't know why. I guess guitars were cool. And I thought if I'm going to learn an instrument, I want to understand music. Pick the cool one, I guess. So yeah, I'd learned guitar through middle school and then high school. Joined at high school, my music taste started to change. I got into heavy metal. I turned into a teenager, I guess. Grew out of the whole pop star thing and then joined a band, which you've been to many of their gigs. Mm-hmm. Was originally a band called Feedback, and then turned into Messiah, the more heavier metal that we got. And then after that, went into college, studied music tech, and then I broke away from that band for various reasons. I grew out of the metal thing, fell into the more depressing singer-songwriter Radiohead stuff, and then tried to start my own music career writing depressing songs about life, which is the title of one of those songs.
And throughout that time, who was your number one supporter who came to every single gig?
You did.
Yes, I did. I was there. I was in the front. I was cheering. I brought all my friends along, Charlie being one of them.
So, okay, getting one of my first plugs out here. Yep. If you search for me on Apple Music or Spotify, there is some depressing songs about life. That's not the name of the album. but there's some music out there that I did from that time. I think throughout college, following college, I then went to a music school in Kilburn where I did like an intensive guitar course where we learned country, jazz, blues, all different styles of guitar. And following that was kind of when I sort of made the effort to record some of my favorite stuff that I'd ever written and then put it out there to the world, basically. In 2012, which was quite late to be honest, after all of it.
This is true. And you've collabed with a lot of people as well. Talk to us about like James and some of the stuff that you've done with him, because you did go down that kind of funky route where you did a lot of live performances that were twists and takes on other tunes.
Yeah.
And kind of tributes and things like that as well.
Before I do that, I did want to just say, so when I released that EP, I made a really good effort of doing at least 5 or 6 gigs in London. I did loads of open mic nights, and that was where I think you showed your most support, because you were traveling to the depths of some random pubs in back end of London, of just me in a little room. I've got some of those performances are on YouTube and stuff like that. Yeah. So you're going to have a lot of links in your show notes.
You're going to have to help me with that. I'm not good with links.
But yeah. But after that, the career didn't take off. I need to start earning money. And then I just sort of fell into sort of the kind of work that I do now. Mm. But to light that creative fire, and to sort of go back on what you were just talking about, I collaborated with one of my friends, James, who's an incredible singer and musician himself. And we just found a weird niche that we fell into of taking contemporary pop songs, and just between us and a bunch of guitar pedals and loop pedals and things like that, we just did our own sort of versions of them, which it tickled that creative juice that I had of just taking something. What was funny is that these were contemporary songs that I didn't know, but James knew. And I only knew them through James and how we performed them. And then sometimes I'd hear them on like the radio. I'd be like, is that the song that I do? Because I wasn't.
It'd be like Justin Timberlake and Swedish House Mafia and all sorts of random ones.
And Drake. And just like.
It was
Childish Gambino. We did like loads of random stuff that I would never naturally listen to. But James was like, this is a cool song, trust me. And I was like, sure, it is, James. and he'd bully me enough that we then played them. So, which is a good, healthy relationship to have with your co-partner. But it worked well. I don't know how or why, and I miss it to this day, to be honest. I think the last time we did a gig was probably now 5 years ago or something like that, which is quite sad.
Just so creative, because it was like you said, you had the loop pedals and it was, you know, you did the percussion, the beatbox, everything. It was like a two-man band.
Yeah, and we did everything from like Block Party to Sia. It was kind of... he actually messaged me the other day and sort of just... I think he sent me a link to, I think, a video that you filmed at Trinity, another gig that you travel to. Trinity is one of the best venues in Harrow, everyone. he's just sent me that. He goes, dude, we were really good. I was like, I know we were.
Oh, we should literally bring you back. Come on. Can you do like a Christmas special or something?
A Christmas special.
Please. I will travel home to the UK for that. Come on. Yeah. That would be fun.
But yeah, so we played at the Olympic Park in London in 2012. Was a thing we did. We went there for a couple of days. They had like little busking spots, and we went there and we just performed, and just random people came by. Mm. But we do have a YouTube channel as well where we've recorded some of our stuff and put it up there. So again,
I will link it below.
Yeah. Dude, I'm expecting some hits after this. I know you're my sister and it's your birthday and all that jazz, but really I came here for the exposure, just to be completely honest with you.
Oh my goodness.
You're right there.
Yes, I just knew that they would be like this.
I wanted to break you.
You are.
You're not making me cry, I'm making you cry.
So moving on from that then, how often would you say that you do practice your musical kind of talent?
To be honest.
You don't just play the guitar, you play the piano as well.
Yeah.
Self-taught as well.
Yeah, and I can hold my own on a drum kit as well. I've got a lot of, I'm quite nerdy when it comes to music. And it was that year I spent in the specific music college in Kilburn, it's called The Institute. That's when a lot of pieces of the puzzle all cling together in terms of music theory. And it's like anything, until you actually understand the science behind something, which is similar to sort of bodybuilding or running or whatever we do. Once you understand how it all knits together and how it works, and music theory for me was when all the pieces came together. So for a guitar, for those who do or don't know, you can play the same note in probably about 6 different places, but on a piano, all the notes there are laid out in front of you. So if you understand the music theory and you can get your hands around it, you can pretty much play whatever you want.
Which is why I never got good at an instrument. Yeah. I couldn't understand the theory.
Yeah.
But
to answer your question, I don't play enough at the moment. I could say that running took up most of my time the last 4 to 6 years or however long I've been really getting into it. And with an injury that I've got recently, I've had a lot of downtime, and that's kind of where I was like, actually, I should actually make use of this extra time that I now have in the day between work and running and relationship.
Yeah. So let's talk about that then. You threw your passion into something else, which you say you're part-time at. But let's be real. You are a marathon runner.
I am. But
you've run several marathons.
I sit next to a guy who's like 20 years older than me, who runs faster than me. So that's where I get my, I have to like put it back into like reality in terms of I take it seriously. And I'm still, I think, either one of two places. I'm either very early on my journey here, or probably towards the end if this injury doesn't sort itself out. I might have to just give it up and like give that music thing another shot. But
so tell us about running. How did that start?
So I think what really, probably between 10, 15 years of my life, I played football religiously on a Thursday. So that was my one athletic thing I did a week that gave me an excuse to drink beer and eat crisps and do whatever I do. Turns out as you get older, you need to do more exercise to continue drinking beer and eating crisps, but we'll come on to that, I'm sure, when you ask me about my diet. But yeah, so I supplemented that playing football with running occasionally during the week. And when I say occasionally, I mean barely 5K, 25 minutes or something, I'd be well chuffed, just to keep my fitness up so that I could continue playing football and get better at playing football. And it wasn't competitive by any means. It was a group of friends that started playing football together on a Thursday night.
It was like a five-a-side thing. Yeah.
Between five and seven-a-side, slightly bigger pitch than a five-a-side. It's very rare that you can get a group of people like that that will commit to it weekly. So we're good friends. I think we still go out. I went out with them a few weeks ago for drinks and things like that. So it was just a good group of friends that loved to play football every Thursday. It was competitive enough that it was fun, but it wasn't too competitive where you got bruised. which some people do take just
too seriously.
They do take it too seriously. And which is one of the reasons I stopped, was because I moved further away from Harrow. I now live in Aylesbury, which is probably a good 45 minutes to an hour away. So I couldn't commit to that every week. I tried to play football with people locally that I work with, and one guy just came in and clattered me. I was like, not for me. Because I was like, if I get hurt here and I can't run a race in a couple of weeks, I'd be very angry.
Yeah.
So
that's really where running took off, and you kind of took it more seriously then.
Yeah, I guess the more further removed out from, it was just a way of keeping fit. I think when I turned 30, there's some pictures of me when I was 30 where I have a much puffier face, sort of, I was about to refer to a Chandler season of Friends to sort of show where my show where my weight was, but I don't know.
That might
work on my pod, but not on yours. I don't want to be don't want any hot takes out there. But yeah, just I had sort of greasy, slick back hair, a big puffy face, and I sort of remember looking at those pictures. I just started a new job in local government, and I sort of look back at those pictures now, and I'm like, wow, that is an almost like a before and after picture that you might put on one of your reels or something like that. And I just thought, actually, I need to start looking after myself, really. I want to stay athletic. I want to stay fit. I want to be able to sort of keep... To be honest, I still want to look good for my partner.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a thing. I don't want her to ever look at me and think, ooh.
You let yourself go.
Yeah. Mm. It's about making the effort there as well. And everyone has that vanity thing as well. Mm-hmm. I just thought, I'm now referred to as, one of my friends referred to me as bone thin and skinny and lean or whatever. But to be honest, that's kind of how I look at myself. That's kind of my build, my athleticness.
You're very tall as well.
I'm very tall as well, which doesn't help for the skinny lean thing. But yeah, so, and then I think shortly after that, I just entered a random 10K in London, thought it'd be fun. I think I came just over 50 minutes or something like that. Mm-hmm.
Did you properly train for it, or was it?
No, and yeah. I was doing all the wrong things that you don't do. Every run I went out was to try and beat the last run that I did, which is not how you train or improve at running. And it's probably like going to the gym and trying to lift the heaviest weight and going, nope, still not. just to throw some comparisons in there. After that, I kind of got a little bit of a bug. I was like, I kind of want to get back under 50 minutes or whatever. And then I remember vividly watching the London Marathon on TV, followed by a YouTuber that I still watch now, his video of running that London Marathon, and I suddenly just got inspired. And I'd never watched the London Marathon start to finish, the professionals. And I watched it and I was just like, there was something just got me. There was a bug or something about it. And then from there, I was like, right, I'm going to set myself a goal to run 10K under 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. I still didn't train properly for it or anything like that, but I went out and made the commitment. I got my, I'm going to say mileage, but I work in kilometers. So I got my kilometers up during the week, ran three or four times a week or whatever. Went and did the race and got 43:25 or something like that. That's one that stays in my head because it was like a race that I actually achieved a goal.
Yeah.
At.
Sorry, just to interrupt there, but it's funny that you said you watched the marathon runners, the professionals do it, and it lit a fire in you. And it's very similar to me training in the gym,
yeah,
trying to grow muscle, and then going to my very first bodybuilding show, watching it and going, yeah, wow, I wonder if I could ever do that.
Yeah.
It's very, very similar.
You know, yeah, it is. And there was also all that coverage of all the regular runners, I should say, or something, which the BBC does do well. They tug at the heartstrings. They show what people have done to train to do it, run for charities.
And why they're doing it.
And why they're doing it as well. But then after that, I remember I went on a road trip to America. I took my running stuff with me on holiday, which was something that I'd never normally do, but I did. And I booked a half marathon in Oxford for the October. So that 10K would have been July. I went on holiday, trained a bit out there, came back, trained a bit more.
I remember
And then did a half marathon. Didn't set myself a time goal. I just wanted to be able to complete it and finish it.
And not die.
And I got around it. I don't remember the time, to be honest. It doesn't stick in my head. But that was the first time that I thought, actually, I haven't worked overly hard, but this is something that I could get good at. Mm. It's something that, I don't know. Maybe I was just... feels like that you're trying to hit for your target goal. And also you practice your nutrition on those runs as well.
That was my next question. I was going to ask, how do you...
How are we doing for time? I'm conscious that we've talked a lot already.
They'll tell us when it's time.
Oh, will they tell
us? Yes, we'll get a warning, don't worry. You're coming with a yellow flag, white flag.
Wrap it up, guys.
stop interrupting me. It's so annoying. Okay, have a sip of your nitro. What I was going to ask you is, how do you then manage your nutrition? Because I obviously coach clients, and I have clients that want to get stronger in the gym, but they also want to manage other things they're doing. And I know how I manage it in terms of nutrition, but I'm curious with you in terms of making sure you've got enough fuel for a long run. Yep. How do you manage your nutrition on the day when you're doing shorter runs? What do you do in the lead up to an actual marathon? Like, is it all pizza and chips the night before, Chris?
100%. Come on. I'm a runner because I can binge on the carbs, man. Seriously. And I'll be honest, I'm not the perfect candidate to talk about nutrition and running. My partner shouts at me about it. You shout at me about it. I've come to Dubai and you're just like injecting protein into me before.
I'm like, get some more protein in.
I walked in, you're like, here's a shake. And I'm just like, all right.
It was vegan.
But yeah, it's all about the day before with running, I find. So if I know I've got a long run, and to be honest, it's trial and error. Everyone's different. Nobody's the same. And you know this, being a coach yourself, you have to adapt to what works for people as well. I know what works for me. Mm-hmm. My go-to on a race day morning is a bagel with jam and peanut butter, because I know it works. I'd never have any gut issues on the run, and I know what to do. And I'll get that in preferably 3 hours before the race. Mm-hmm. with an actual carb drink as well. So I'm hydrating and getting the carbs in at the same time.
Yeah.
And it's kind of ticking that box for me. And the day before would be a giant freaking pizza or a big... To be honest, I've never done the pasta thing.
No.
And because I haven't done the pasta thing, I'll probably never try the pasta thing.
Because now you're like, what if that throws me off?
Yeah. But the tip for anyone doing it is, if you've got 16 weeks that you're training for a marathon, practice that stuff. That Sunday long run is your rehearsal, whether you're running 20K or running 35K in that. Practice what you're going to eat the night before.
Practice your peak.
Practice your peak. Practice what you're going to eat the night before. Take gels out that you might want to use. Find out what's on the course on race day as well, what they're handing out, and try it. Because then if it works, you don't have to carry them with you, because you can pick them up from the course. All of these things. I've learned all of this by doing it.
Yeah.
But it's all about practicing on that day.
And what do you prefer on the day to have with you?
What? The expensive gels. It's really annoying. I've tried the Science and Sports stuff.
Yeah.
I think the Manchester Marathon I did, they were handing out Science and Sports, so I knew it worked, and I tried them on a few races. But there's a brand called Morton that do gels, and the reason I like them is, and I'm not sponsored, if you want to.
Stop looking at the camera.
This is all going to be your little 90-second reel, isn't it?
Yeah, probably. Yeah,
just me looking at the camera, plug in.
Creepy.
I can't do it. I'll stop it. The reason I like them is they don't taste of anything. They go down easy. They're a little bit solid, so it's like doing a Jello shot. They just straight down. You don't have to worry about the taste or anything like that. And they stay down. They didn't cause me any gut problems. And I practiced with them and they just worked. Mm-hmm. And because they're bland, it's good. Sometimes you want flavor.
Yeah.
I haven't done it, but if I ever did something like an ultra marathon, like those 50, 100K races, I could imagine you want something different at some point, because you're just craving weird stuff probably throughout 8 hours of running. But for something that I know, this is what I'm going to work. I'm taking it every 30 to 40 minutes during the race. I'm just going to need something to get down. The one thing I'm jealous of professionals of is that they get handed bottles. And if I could, I'd probably move to liquid carbs.
Yeah.
Just because you're getting that hydration and it's easier to drink and it's kind of like all in one.
Mm.
Whereas when I've done marathons, because I'm just part of the rest of the people, I know I'm going to get water on the course, so I don't have to worry about that.
So you don't do the whole like water in your backpack with a tube that comes all the way up around your head and all this malarkey?
It's overkill. Although, I say that, I probably don't hydrate enough, to be honest. No. I probably break all the rules. But I hydrate before, I hydrate the day before as well. It's all about the prep leading up to it. And then make sure you get your pee out and anything else that needs to come out before the race. And then I just know that water to thirst on the course is all I need to worry about. If I'm thirsty, drink water.
Yeah.
Make sure if I haven't drank water in, like I say, every half an hour and there's a cup or something, just get a little bit down and just sip it. It's fine. It's better than nothing.
Mm.
The Morton gels, I think, they contain a little bit of some sort of liquid in there as well, I guess, as well.
So at the end of the day, you've got to do what works for you.
Exactly.
And some people are like, oh, I need loads of water. And others would be like, no, I'd rather have nothing or not that much, because I just want to focus on. And the reality is if you're doing it in 4 hours or less,
yeah,
you're not going to die in 4 hours, but yeah. you will get serious cramps and everything afterwards if you're not hydrating.
Yeah, and from the few marathons that I've done leading up to probably, I think, my best run that I've done earlier this year, I think I've learned a lot of what works, what didn't work, and then I've managed to get it right for the day.
So let's talk about that, Chris.
Yay!
So we did the virtual marathon, was marathon number one.
325. I then, the following year, ran an actual race in Liverpool where I ran 317, which I think went well. I can't remember the training leading up to that. I should probably keep a logbook or something. Oh, I'll probably go on Strava and find all that stuff out.
You had
well.
A coach for that, did you not?
I had a coach for part of it.
Yeah.
So you got me a...
I was going to say, did I not get you a coach?
You did. You
this?
Got me a Christmas birthday, yeah. one of the two, something like that. Yeah. You got me a coach for a period of time.
Because you were like, I'm going to do an actual marathon.
No, so I did Liverpool. After Liverpool, you got me a coach. Mm. And then I think more races got cancelled again because there was like another wave of COVID or something like that. So some of the races that I was training for didn't happen. So I had a coach for, I think, 12 weeks or something. He gave me a plan. And that was leading into what was going to be my first Manchester Marathon race in April of 2021, 22, something like that. I can't remember. Why can I not remember? They blur when they're only not long ago.
So it was Liverpool, then it was Manchester.
It was Manchester, but I got injured. And I got injured with the injury I have now.
And what is that injury, Chris?
It's something to do with my butt.
Can't keep putting it out there.
Yeah, I've got like a hip joint problem with my piriformis, something like that. As you know, as we talk about regularly, I don't do enough strength training. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I don't have enough support in my glutes for certain joints. And therefore, that repetitive injury or that repetitive movement or load.
It's a high impact.
That load that I'm putting through it, that's the only thing that's taking it because I don't have enough support around it.
Yeah.
So that happened back then. And I saw a physio. I did some exercises and I got myself fit enough to run the marathon, but not do a PB. And I snuck in under 3:30, which I was chuffed with
that's
first time.
Still really good. Yeah.
So I did that. I think I did that April 2022. And then, after that, I then literally signed up for the Manchester Marathon again the week afterwards, because I loved the course. I loved the crowd. You could get in it, which is half the battle. And then I trained and ran for it again. I ran it again this year and then got a PB this year, which I was chuffed with.
And you're forgetting something else as well. You didn't just do the Manchester one.
I ran London the week after.
Yeah. Just throw that in there. Yes. Back-to-back marathons.
Yeah.
So London Marathon is notoriously hard to get into.
Yes.
You were able to get a spot on there, which you were really excited about.
Yeah.
But you knew that you were doing Manchester the week before and you were like, no, I'll be fine.
Yeah. So shout out to my brother Alex and his in-laws who managed to get me into the London Marathon through a charity. And I've always wanted to do London Marathon. I apply for the ballot every year. Just because I can. I've always had a weird thing about doing charity places for it because it's a lot of money. It's a lot of pressure to put on relatives and friends to get that money. And I do running for me.
Yeah.
So I never wanted to put that pressure on anyone else. But they were very kind enough to get me that spot through that charity place, which I'm grateful for. But I was training for Manchester the week before, which was my peak race, which was the one I wanted to do, which for a whole year's build up, basically, of training and getting there. And I ran it in 3:12. And I think that's probably one of the best races I've ever ran because everything kind of went right. I'd learned lessons from the year before. Mm-hmm. I did those extended long runs in those blocks and that training. I practiced nutrition. I practiced my race day shoes and kit. I did all of the things that you should do. And there was a period even after where most people hit the wall in a race and there's like a slight... Manchester's pretty flat. It's known for being a flat race, but there is a slight incline just after 30K where the year before I remember people just dropping out and just walking to the sides. And I was just like kind of, I'm still not a fast marathon runner in comparison to many people, but I remember just sort of gliding past thinking, I'm doing all right. I feel all right. I feel great. I was like, I've never felt that good at that sort of section in a marathon. Normally I'm like, God, I'm blowing. I've got 10K to go. I'm not going to make it.
And
to
do
the
you
end.
Keep an eye on the time as you go?
Yes.
Of course.
The Garmin thing, I set loads of little, I set a screen up that tells me my average pace, my lap pace and all of that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I know that I'm ticking it off. I will say that GPS can throw wobblies and always be mindful for markers on the course. So They do these funny little tattoos. I've never got them, but I've always wanted to, that tell you sort of this, your target, say your target time is 3:30 for the marathon. It tells you what your time should be at 5, 10, 15, 20K. So that as you go through the splits and you see the signs, you know, you can just quickly look down, look at your watch and know your time and know that you've done it. You're on a goal. Because as great as GPS is with tall buildings, especially in London Marathon, around Canary Wharf,
I can imagine.
It just goes, throws a wobbly. Everyone's little Strava map for London Marathon is like, perfect, perfect, perfect. What happened here? And then it carries on and goes back around, which is good fun.
And so you would say the Manchester one that you did this year was the best?
Yeah.
You enjoyed it the most?
I everything went right on race day, to be honest. Although I've never ran, I don't think I've ever ran a marathon fully fit. I had issues with plantar fasciitis going into that race, which I had to sort of manage just through painkillers and things like that, and hindered my training a bit going into it. So in my head, I've got this niggle that I can go faster. I know that there's something there, which is where that bug comes from. It's where once you do something and you achieve something like that, you're like, I can go better.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Because once you've achieved a goal, you're like, okay, well, what's the next thing and how can I improve that?
Yeah.
Injured at the moment now.
Yeah.
The goal is to recover.
Yeah.
Build some muscle.
And do things properly.
Eat properly.
Yeah.
Get some more food in you. Yeah. Let's talk about nutrition.
Go on then.
Okay, so becoming vegan.
Yes.
Remind me when that happened, because I feel like it's been forever. I actually don't remember the last time you ate meat.
It's 2017.
Or anything that was not plant-based.
2017, because I know, because it was just before I started my current job. Mm. Or I started for the council that I work for now.
And was that before you started marathon running?
Yes.
Yeah.
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 So how do you manage your nutrition then around that and make sure that you do get enough protein in? I'm going to quiz you on this now, because you don't eat enough, in my opinion. I'm like, I'm sitting there going, oh, Chris, I've got to get another meal in. We've got to go to the mall. We've got this to do today. I'm like, do you need to eat? And you're like, nah, I'm good.
Just caffeine, like, man. I don't know what you're... caffeine with a few sweet and lows that you didn't ask for.
But you do eat a lot of sweets and you
do eat
a lot
of
carbs.
Sweets and carbs and all that other stuff. It's funny. I think when I first turned vegan, there wasn't the wonderful, disgusting processed food you can get now. Mm. There wasn't burgers and sausages or a Kentucky Fried Chicken vegan burger or a McPlant from McDonald's or an amazing thing from Starbucks as well. So I had to make a conscious effort of actually buying ingredients and making stuff. But being Greek, as you know, we are, in case you forgot.
just a little bit.
A lot of the foods that we eat are... pulses.
Yeah.
So chickpeas, butter beans, all that sort of stuff. So a lot of my protein came from there at the start. But since then, I kind of threw peanut butter in the morning or
Have you
shakes.
Stopped having Huel? No, Huel was something you were using for a while, was
Huel,
it not?
Huel is something I use every day, to be honest. Every day, every lunchtime, either supplements or is my lunch. Mainly because it has that list on the back that is everything that you need nutrition-wise. And it's very strange that when I don't have it regularly or if I go off it for a bit, I do feel a little bit worse.
You notice it.
I notice it. Mm. So Huel is something that works for me.
Okay.
As well.
And so moving forward then, obviously once you're recovered, have you got another goal in mind?
In my head, before I stop running, I want to run a marathon in under 3 hours.
I knew you were going to say
that. That's the goal. Just so that guy who's 20 years older than me at work, I can go, I did it as well. And to be honest, one thing I don't know whether marathons feel more natural to me than shorter distances, but I don't. For where my marathon time is, my 5K and 10K times don't match. There's like a weird matrix you can do that. If you can run a 5K in this time, your marathon
time should be this. Yeah.
My marathon times almost over exceed what my 5K and 10K PBs are. Okay. Like I've just snuck under 5K, under 20 minutes for a 5K and just snuck under 40 minutes for a 10K. But in theory, based on my marathon time, I should be able to run them quicker than that.
Okay.
So that's another thing. I do want to get my shorter distances quicker. But that's about it.
And December, then you're just going to wait and see.
It's a marathon that I've paid for that is in Valencia. So even if I go there and jog it or walk around it or something, I would like to still be able to do it if I'm healthy enough to even do that. So that's kind of the goal.
And the goal was also for you to come up to Dubai and practice a few runs out here in the heat to get used to
it. This was meant to be my warm weather training and
seeing you,
but mainly my warm weather training. So
it wasn't exposure and it wasn't coming to see your sister for a birthday.
Yeah, exactly. You're just a byproduct of
thanks.
Your holiday adjacent.
But you are the first person to come out and visit me for my birthday in the 7 years that I've lived here. And my number one supporter of my bodybuilding journey as well.
I created a fake Instagram account just to stalk your pro debut.
I haven't even got
onto
that.
Yeah.
Chris is not on social media.
No.
He's the only one that watches all of my YouTube.
Yeah.
Well, he Most catches up and he messaged me.
I binge
it. Yeah. He's like, Bex, I've binged a lot. How's prep going? I'm like, yeah, good.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're not on Instagram. So you created a fake account just to see how I was doing.
Yeah, when you were competing in Sweden, I needed to see what was happening. So yeah. That was all. So that was important to me. I've now got rid of it because I'm not a fan. But
that's another discussion.
That's another discussion for another day because I don't want you to lose all your fans.
No, but I completely appreciate each their own. And ultimately, you need to live a life that's going to bring you fulfillment and something you enjoy doing. And you have other avenues from which you can obtain content.
Yes.
And content is something that you like to consume.
I do
so
like
to consume. Should we talk about that and should we plug that a little bit?
Yes, we can.
Go for it, because I don't not want to say the title of your podcast because I am going to fluff
it up. Can you give it one go?
The culture. No, I can't. I just can't do it. I can't. I'm going to mess
it up. So I talked about tickling that creative thing that I have. I do have a podcast with my friend Jeffrey called The Cultural Content Consumption Appraisal Hour, where we
slow it down and say it again.
The Cultural Content Consumption Appraisal Hour.
Yes.
Put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
Where basically we pitch each other some sort of content, whether to watch each week, and then we just review it and guess how much the other person's going to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And we have a 30-second game at the beginning of every episode to explain what the pod's about to new listeners. So, yeah. And it was basically me just playing with Logic on my Mac, and I got to just edit it and put it together and put it out there in the world. And it's a good excuse to have a chat with my friend every week.
So, every single week?
Every single
week. And you do both consume content, so it's like you pitch each other different things all the time. Yeah. And I was a special guest this week on it.
You are.
I was the first special guest.
True.
No.
Ali's been on it.
What? Okay.
You missed that one.
I must have done.
Yeah.
Damn. But anyway.
Yeah.
So I will put that in the show notes and in the description box below so people can tune in.
Yeah.
But you're really enjoying that. And I think it's a nice outlet for you, like you said, to kind of touch base with your friend every single week, have a good old chat. And
if someone listens, great.
Yeah. And you know, you do get feedback and you do have an email and all this other stuff. And don't you have it another platform where it's hosted somewhere else where people can actually, you haven't created an Instagram from it, a Twitter from it or something?
Oh yeah, there's we're on X. Come on now.
Okay. Okay.
Twitter doesn't exist anymore.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Oops.
But we have some socials, but we're very bad at the socials. So I was hoping to actually pick your brains today actually about social content.
We can do that afterwards because I think we're running out of time.
Yeah, we are. I think we
are. But pardon?
This has flown by.
It really has. Yeah. But we can talk for ages. Like,
we can.
We've literally been talking nonstop since you arrived. But I have two questions.
Go on.
You should remember what they are because you watched it.
I know what one of them is, but I can't remember what the other one is.
Okay, first one
I binged them on the way here.
You did. You did very well, to be fair. It was a 7-hour flight, so I appreciate that. Okay, first question is mindset shifts. Mm-hmm. Biggest ones you've had, either related to becoming vegan, moving from being a musician to a runner, anything that's kind of been a milestone kind of mindset shift for you in life, which has changed the trajectory of things for you. I know. It's not that deep. It's mindset change.
I don't know if I've got anything for like life, but in terms of struggling with injury and training for things, enjoying the process is something that I've learned to do. I actually enjoy being in a training block. I enjoy the weird, strict nature of doing those runs every week on the time. But then understanding that you need the flexibility as well. I went from being, I have to do that run today because the plan tells me to actually, as long as I get the mileage in and the effort in during the week, that's okay as well. But then also when suffering with injury, not getting super depressed about it and finding ways to cope with it and finding other outlets is also important because everyone sets goals and you don't know what's going to happen on race day. So enjoying the training is half the fun.
That's what I always say about bodybuilding. Enjoy the journey.
Yeah.
Because you don't know when it's going to end. You don't know how it's going to go.
I can't pick the weather on race day. I can't decide if the wind's going to be blowing when I turn a corner and hindering me or whether my gut just decides to go funny on the day. Anything can happen. So there's that.
Yeah. Anything else? Well, would you say that's the biggest mindset shift for you is those two things?
In relation to running and training,
yeah.
I don't know if I've got anything deep and meaningful. at the tip of my tongue anyway.
And then my final question is related to how you'd like to be remembered. So you started off by saying that you are a performer, you like entertaining, you're a bit of an attention seeker, but we haven't even touched on what you do as your day job as well and the fulfillment you get from that, working with other individuals and being operations manager essentially in what you do. So what would you like
I'm a team leader now, just
so you know. Bex,
just I'm a team leader. Anyone listens to me, I'd be like, he's not an operations manager.
I still think you pretty much are, but that's between us. What would you like to be remembered for?
So the way I look at my job at a local council in Buckinghamshire. Well, actually, I work for Buckinghamshire Council. Is just I want to be able to make an impact or a difference in what I do. Mm. So in terms of sort of, I don't know, I think the question is like legacy or something that you ask at the end of these things.
You remember.
It's just, I want to be able to know that the place is better than when I walked into it, and that if I leave it, I've left it in a better place than it was. That's kind of, that's all I can do, is be the best at whatever I'm doing and hopefully make people's lives easier in the process. And I guess working for local government, I'm actually impacting like residents, people and stuff like that. And it's their taxpayers' money, so we should be using it efficiently and using it better. So that's kind of that.
And from what I know of you, obviously being your sister, is that you do it in a really positive way and you make a lot of friends along the way as well.
Yeah.
You're a different kind of team leader, that's for sure. And it's hard to navigate all of that. And yeah, you're an entertainer at heart.
I try my best. I'm not going to look in the camera again now.
You kind of have to, because it's like a goodbye.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
If we both look at the camera at the same time, it's going to mess up their like auto-fix.
Could you say goodbye and I'll say take care? Because that's kind of like a thing I'm very...
Okay. All right. So now I've got to try and close it off. And
Yeah. Do your summary. If there is one thing.
Thank you so much for watching, guys. I really hope you enjoyed this episode. A bit different to my normal ones, but there's no way that I was going to have my brother here in Dubai and not have him come on the pod and us just have a good old chat and catch up. So thank you so much for watching, listening if you're on the audio version, and I will catch you in the next one. Take care. I took your line.
You did. Sorry, Jeff does it as well.
I hope you're watching, Jeff.
Take care, everyone.